Blog Talk Radio.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I am 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I am Nathan Hale and Paul Revere. I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, and Davy Crockett. I'm Lee and Abe Lincoln. I remember the Alamo, the Maine, and Pearl Harbor. When freedom called, I answered and stayed until it was over there. I left my heroic dead in Flanders fields and in the steaming jungles of Vietnam. I am the Brooklyn Bridge, the wheatlands of Kansas, and the granite hills of Vermont. I am the coal fields of the Virginias and Pennsylvania, the fertile lands of the West, the Golden Gate and Grand Canyon. I sprawl from the Atlantic to the Pacific. 3 million square miles. I'm more than 3 million farms. I'm forest, field, mountain, and desert. I'm quiet villages, and I'm cities that never sleep. You can look at me and see Ben Franklin walking down the streets of Philadelphia. I'm Babe Ruth in the World Series. I'm 130,000 schools and colleges and 326,000 churches where my people worship God as they please. I'm a ballot dropped in a box. I am an editorial in a newspaper, and I'm a letter to a congressman. I'm Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein. I'm Horace Greeley, Will Rogers, and the Wright brothers. I'm George Washington Carver, Daniel Webster, and Jonas Salk. I'm Walt Whitman, Thomas Paine, Tom Sawyer, and Walt Disney. Yes, I am the nation, and these are the things that I am. I was conceived in freedom, and God willing, in freedom I'll spend the rest of my days. May I possess always the integrity, the courage, and the strength to keep myself unshackled, to remain a citadel of freedom and a beacon of hope to the entire world. I am the nation.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Patriot Education. My name is Terry Rowland, and I'm your hostess for this evening. As always, I am brought to you by and through the good offices of the great folks at www.patriotfamilies, that's ILYS.com, a group of people who understand that being the nation is what keeps this nation strong. Our topic tonight, ladies and gentlemen, is educational expectations. We live our lives with lots and lots of expectations. We expect our employers to value our services and compensate us fairly. We expect our families and our friends to care for us and show concern and listen when we have troubles or problems. We expect our nation to be strong and to provide a place of freedom where we can grow to become whatever our desire, our ability, and our work ethic makes us be. We expect many things in our lives. Sometimes we're disappointed in our expectations. They aren't always met by friends or family or employer or nation. But we continue to expect. And that is part and parcel of why we have allowed our educational system to come to the disastrous state in which we currently find it. I really don't think most people ever stop to consider what it is that we expect from our schools, both public and private. What is it that we want from our educational system? If you asked any 10 people, they'd probably come up with about 30 different expectations. But in general, I think probably the first one, and the one that would be most common, is we expect our schools to give our children the academic tools they need to succeed in life. We expect our schools to teach our kids the things that we were taught in whatever way they can that will give our children those tools. That's a big expectation, ladies and gentlemen. A really big one. Because I think a great many of us forget to consider that expectations aren't always met, and that expectations are based on experience, perception, and reasoning most of the time. But when it comes to our children, expectations are often based in emotion and not experience and reason. We want what is best for our kids. We want for them a risk-free, safe, and prosperous life. We want for them avoidance of the mistakes we may have made. We want for them a place where learning is promoted and they are safe from harm while they take advantage of the learning available. We want them to be happy at school. We want them to be happy everywhere. And it is this emotional perception and the expectations it gives rise to that has created most of the problems we have in our public education system. Progressive education, like any other progressive idea, appeals to emotion, not reason, and not experience. Progressives are very, very, very good at touching the heartstrings, that promising that everybody will be happy, everybody will be comfortable, everybody will have equal stuff in their house, makes people feel good. And when you feel good and you think you're going to get something that makes you feel even better, you won't think when you walk into a voting booth or approach a voting machine. You'll merely choose a name that promised you those things, whether or not your experience and your reason tells you that they cannot deliver. Because we base many of our decisions on our emotional reactions, ladies and gentlemen, and we have allowed that to be the basis upon which our children are educated, we have an administration, a Senate, and a minority in the House of Representatives who use it cynically and with malice aforethought to ram down the throats of all of us Americans, our children, as well as ourselves, the idea that all you have to do to be safe and comfortable is to give up your liberty. When we rely on our emotional expectations, ladies and gentlemen, from the behemoth of government, we might as well just walk blithely into the gas chamber holding our rock and wait for the shower we were promised. My friend Linda Sills, that beautiful bird of paradise, my favorite California conservative, regarding the Los Angeles United School District and their receipt of $990,000 from a $37 million grant program for the state of California to engage students in promoting Obamacare to their family and friends. The Los Angeles School District will be doing its best to target those who are in the educational system and train them to go home and promote free health care for all under the Affordable Care Act to their mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters and aunts and uncles and grandparents. And they will get the money that's been promised them when we see, meaning the Los Angeles United School District, results, as in polling the local citizenry to see whether or not the percentages have changed toward Obamacare. Nationwide, it is not a popular idea. More and more people are realizing that when you get something free, you get what you pay for. And it's worth just about as much. I don't know if the rest of you out there are familiar with the history of Hitler's rise to power in the 1930s in Germany and his creation of the Hitler Youth. The Hitler Youth Corps was a program that recruited children, mostly boys, but girls too, from the ages of about 8 through 16 or 17. It had uniforms and shiny badges and insignia, and believe me, the Nazis had great uniform designers. Just look at the Gestapo. You want to see a good-looking uniform? Take a look at that one. And it was designed to be a social instrument so that the children would educate their parents on the benefits of Nazism, the National Socialist Party, and its goals and aims. And I'm sure there were grants of a sort to many different schools, making sure that the Hitler Youth could hold their meetings and their rallies and speak to the classrooms to promote the glories of the Third Reich. If you are not familiar with history, ladies and gentlemen, I would suggest that you read up on Germany from 1929 through 1945. And then read up on California and its $37 million grants to promote Obamacare. If the similarities don't strike you, then I would suggest you see a medical professional because you are suffering from some form of mental disorder, ranging from abysmal stupidity to anything and everything beyond it. Then you look at the wonders of Common Core and the way in which its standards, so-called, were created. Read an article on The Blaze today, written by someone who was a part of the supposed standards committee. No one, who was attempting to create a set of reasonable standards for academic excellence would have gone about it the way the Common Core people did. The validation committee, which was supposed to suggest and look over and discuss the standards and their applicability, was not expected to do those things in actual fact. It was a rubber stamp. And it was the only part of the process that contained actual living teachers who work with students every single day during the school year. The Common Core standards were created as a, I guess you could say, combination sugar cube and horsewhip to get states to dumb down their populations in exchange for federal funds. The Common Core was tied into the program that was supposed to raise the academic standards across the nation so that everybody in the United States would be competitively educated to take part in a global economy. And it was backed and created to put forth and to make palatable and implement the United Nations Agenda 21 plans for a global government that would take from those who are productive and pass through the pockets of those in charge and dribble down in tiny increments to those who were not productive. My friend Linda says they do this with everything. They dangle dollars in front of the states and cities to get them to sign up for all their stuff, and she's quite correct. I posted a cartoon on Facebook today. It shows a very large fish with America tattooed on its side and a fish hook dangling in front of it with a little worm called entitlements wrapped around it. And the fish is thinking in his little bubble, oh boy, free stuff. And that is exactly how we have come to where we are today. Instead of expectations based on experience and reason and common sense and understanding of people, our expectations have been twisted out of shape by the use of emotional, feel-good garbage, so that now the vast majority of people seem to expect that somebody owes them something merely because they exist. And that attitude, ladies and gentlemen, has been put into our society through the minds of the most vulnerable among us, our children. I don't know what your expectations are, ladies and gentlemen, of teachers. Earlier, I said that probably most people would share the common expectation that school was supposed to be a place where their children were happy and learning the things they would need to succeed in life. I think a common expectation among most people regarding teachers is that teachers should be the equivalent of Mother Teresa, only with a book instead of a bandage. Altruistic, kind, compassionate, caring, loving saints who never make a mistake, who never expect more than your child is willing to give, who are always nice to everyone, who are fun to be with, and who like all of their students, who are pals with everybody, and defer to the parents for the good of their children, because obviously the parents are the ones who really know the child, and they really are the ones who understand what that child is capable of learning, and what they're not, and what's too hard for them, and what they should have. This is the perception, the expectation that many people have of what teachers are. Well, I'm old, ladies and gentlemen. My parents didn't have that kind of an expectation of a teacher. As a matter of fact, they expected teachers to be strict, demanding, firm, but fair. And they expected them to know their subject and to impart that knowledge to their students. And they expected those teachers to maintain disciplined classrooms where everyone had a chance to listen and learn, and to remove from class those who were disruptive or inattentive so that they did not damage the possibilities for the students who were interested or motivated enough to work at the process of learning. Those were the expectations my parents had. Those are the expectations I have of myself in a classroom. I had an evaluation yesterday from the principal of my school. It's standard operating procedure at the end of the academic year. Normally it's done on the last working day, but our principal forgot that we paraprofessionals weren't going to be there on the last working day, so I had to go back to school yesterday and do the evaluation. It was a positive experience in that I was marked as distinguished or proficient in all of the categories, which means I know how to do my job, and in some areas I do it extraordinarily well, which I find to be very gratifying. I like feeling valued. I believe that my principal was sincere when he said that I was an asset to the school system and to the school where I teach in particular, because of my flexibility and my ability to take on just about anything and do my best at it. I was highly complimented. But that's what I expect of myself. I do not expect to have somebody else do my job for me, and I take the credit for it. I do not expect children to learn without effort. I do not expect them to automatically know what I'm talking about. Sometimes it takes two or three different explanations or different comparisons to make a concept clear. I do not expect never to have to address a subject different from my usual. In my position, I address all the subjects for three grade levels. And I enjoy that because my background is in tutoring. I would be a candidate for the closest mental hospital, and they could book my straitjacket if I had to teach the same subject over and over again to the same bunch of kids for 9 straight months. I would definitely be ready for the rubber room, and I don't mean the one where they pay you to make real estate deals and read novels. I mean the kind where they lock you in and it only has one little window so you can bounce off the walls and not break any glass. But I thought about my evaluation, and I thought that in order to be scored so highly for what I do and the way I do it, expectations of teachers from the administration side must be fairly low. Because Lord knows I am no saint, and I am far from perfect, and I have a temper. And there are definitely times that I lose it. And I generally don't just nod and say yes when I disagree with something. Nor do I present a warm, cuddly, fuzzy, grandmotherly aspect to my students. That's not what I'm there for. When you are in charge of the in-school suspension classroom, warm, fuzzy grandmothers are not the way to go. We do not want in-school suspension to be a vacation, a playground, or tea at grandmommy's house. It's supposed to be at least fairly unpleasant without being either cruel or depriving the children of the ability to keep up with what they're academically expected to know. If administrative expectations of teachers are low, and parental expectations of teachers are unbelievably high, what are teachers' expectations of themselves? Does anybody ever ask them what they expect? And I don't mean the teachers' unions, because they do not speak for teachers, in spite of what they say. They do not speak for teachers. They speak for the union. Just like most unions today, they no longer speak for the worker. They speak for the union boss. But if you talk to teachers, and I don't mean fresh outs or people in the rubber rooms or either kind, but actual working teachers who haven't thrown up their hands in frustrations and quit after less than 5 years. I have a feeling that most of them would say that they expect from their job satisfaction and joy. There's an old saying, if you can't do, teach. And there are a lot of people out there, a lot of parents, who appear to believe that that's the case. That somehow or other, teaching is a refuge for those who can't succeed in the real world. And in a way, I understand that expectation. Because the world of academia is very different from the real world. I know of no business that offers tenure, for example, except possibly Congress. And that only because so many people are too stupid to realize that the things they don't like about government are directly coming from the people they voted in to constitute government. But you can cure ignorance, ladies and gentlemen. Stupidity is incurable. There will always be stupid. And it has no cure. Ignorance exists, and it can be cured. And that, supposedly, is why we have schools. Because that's what they actually are for. Not to make our kids feel good. Not to give them a playground with adult supervision so mom and daddy can go to work and get the third car and the eighth television and the extra three laptops that everybody wants. But to give children knowledge, to have expectations of students. I know pretty well what the expectations of most students are, given that I've dealt with the middle school age group for over 40 years now, off and on, and in several different capacities. Most kids expect what their parents tell them to expect or show them to expect. Children's expectations are based on experience, not necessarily on rational reasoning, because their ability to reason is not fully formed, but on experience, their masters. What they know and what they have known is what they expect. If mom and daddy tell them the teachers are stupid, or that the teacher doesn't like you and that's why you got an F on your test, or you just need to tell the teacher that you don't understand it and then you won't have to do it, this is what the children expect. And when they don't get it, they come home and tell mommy and daddy how mean everybody is to them, and mommy and daddy go to school and demand that the teachers meet their child's expectations. What is it that we want from school, ladies and gentlemen? What did you want from school when you attended? Did you want to go and have fun with your friends, eat in the cafeteria, play sports, giggle in the hallways, gossip about who's dating who, play tag at recess, whatever grade? Is that what you wanted from school? Did you want to learn things? Did you want to know how to read so you could read for yourself when mommy was busy and couldn't read out loud to you? Did you want to learn how to count things so you could make sure your sister didn't have more cookies than you did? Did you want to know something about stuff that your grandparents talked about? Historical events and the way things were when they were kids and the changes in the town in which you live. What were you expecting from school? I'd like us all to imagine for a few moments that we are first years heading to Hogwarts for the first time, getting on the Scarlet Hogwarts Express, headed for that great castle in the far north, wondering what it's going to be like, thinking, I can do so many things I don't understand. Somebody's going to explain it to me, and somebody's going to show me how to do these things well and do even more things and even better. And I'm going to learn things, and I'm going to meet people. In a way, the Harry Potter books are an excellent indictment of what's happened to our school system. The parallels are very interesting. For those of you who have not read them, I really think you should, aside from the fact that they're a lot of fun and very well written and thoroughly engaging. They tell you something about what school is supposed to be, with a good bit of experience and reasoning thrown in. The teachers at Hogwarts are not all saints. Neither are they all monsters. The students at Hogwarts are not perfectly innocent little darlings who cannot wait to eagerly drink in the wisdom of their professors. They do dumb things. They play stupid games. They bully each other, or try to. Or they stand up and refuse to be bullied. Our kids' expectations of school have been twisted out of all recognition, ladies and gentlemen. Now, public schools are nothing more than indoctrination camps for government policy and government ideas and progressive feel-good emotional appeals to, well, we're going to have horrible climate change and we have to be ready for it, and you just aren't allowed to have more than Susie sitting next to you because that's not fair. And fair is what everybody should have because we deserve it. Well, it's not fair, ladies and gentlemen, that we have to suffer failure and illness and tragedy and despair and trouble and difficulty and poverty and all of the other ills that human flesh is heir to. But I don't recall ever being promised that everything would always be fair. What I was told was that it was my job to be fair. And if I was fair in the way I treated people, and honest, and upright, then I could and would make a difference in the world. Not by standing on a pinnacle somewhere and having everybody bow down and worship me, which is apparently the epitome of the power seeker, particularly the one in the Oval Office, but make a difference one person at a time. Because really, that was all I was ever asked or expected to do. I was also expected to give 100% to anything I attempted, because that was the way a good person dealt with life. You don't do a half-baked job. You don't do a sloppy job. You don't half-finish something or do less than your best because somebody else will be disappointed because you were better than they were, or because your best won't be good enough, so why bother to try? No, you did your best no matter what. And if you didn't, then you really got a lecture. I remember vividly the one that I got when I brought home a D in Algebra 1. And all my protestations of I just didn't understand what they were talking about fell on deaf ears as far as my dad was concerned, because he knew that I was bright and eager to learn. And he was just astonished and disappointed that I could possibly bring home a grade like that, the first one he ever saw on any report card of mine in my entire schooling life. Well, come to find out, there had been an error, and instead of being placed in the regular Algebra 1 class, I was placed in the advanced one because I was in advanced English, and the class was already halfway through Algebra 1 in 8th grade when they got there, and I had no clue what the heck they were talking about. So once we got that straight, I struggled my way through and finished the year with a C average, and only really learned the basics when I was in my 30s and teaching it to other students. But in general, I didn't resent the fact, and I didn't berate my father with it or, you know, call him cruel or abusive because of that. He had high expectations. And generally, I fulfilled them. And his experience and his reasoning told him that something wasn't right. And because he knew that the first step in learning is for the student to put forth an effort, and I was right there, he decided to find out what I wasn't doing first. And when I showed him what I was doing and what I didn't understand, and he realized that I was not just being lazy, I really had no clue what they were talking about, he helped me. And that was why I managed to pull my grade up to a C. Because his expectations were that if I were given the opportunity to learn what I needed to know, I would put forth my best effort to learn it. And thank fortunes, I did live up to those expectations. Our educational expectations, ladies and gentlemen, need to be very, very clear. We need to stop waiting for the warm, fuzzy, feel-good garbage that comes out of the federal government or the State Department of Education hungry for federal money. And we need to sit down and take a good hard look at what it is we expect from public school. The basics. What are our underlying basic expectations? What do we want from our schools? What do we expect them to do for our children? If we do not start paying attention, ladies and gentlemen, and really thinking about what it is we are trying to give these kids, we will soon have a generation of American citizens who cannot and will not think or do for themselves, because their expectations have been so badly twisted that they will do nothing unless somebody promises them they will get something without working for it. And when they believe that those expectations are logical and reasonable and rational, we are sunk as a nation. Because you don't get anything, ladies and gentlemen, without effort. Breathing is an effort. It requires you to exercise the muscles that move your lungs. It requires you to have a functioning autonomic nervous system. It requires you to have a common sense approach to where it is you want to be when you breathe. For example, standing on the bottom of a filled swimming pool is not a good place to try to breathe. Effort and knowledge are absolutely essential. my friend Linda wrapped it up in a nutshell. We have a society of fools who stand in line for shoes that cost $189, and then a clown comes to rob them of their money. The whole idea, as she says, it's materialism, that things matter more. Over and over and over, ladies and gentlemen, I tell my students that the only thing that is theirs to keep forever is what's in their heads. No one can take that away from them without their consent. Somebody can take away just about anything else, any object can be stolen from you. Your material possessions, your position in life, your financial success can go away. And when they do, the only way that you are going to survive and return to some kind of security is by using what you have in your brain and in your heart. I am not a Vulcan, ladies and gentlemen. I don't decry emotion and swear we should eliminate it completely and base everything on logic and rationality, because logic, too, has its flaws in that unless everybody agrees on the premises and their truth, all the logical argument in the world, perfect as it is not going to make cats fly. Which is one of the reasons why progressives generally avoid logic, because they would have to find premises that are actually true, and since they are not very good at recognizing truth, even when it comes up and, you know, smacks them in the face like a wet fish, using logic is kind of out of the question, because they have no understanding of what actually is a truth and what is not. Which is one of the reasons why they operate on emotion. It's a lot easier to sway the group with emotional appeals than it is with rational ones, because progressives rely on the mob, ladies and gentlemen. That's one of the reasons that progressive education emphasizes the group over the individual and self-esteem over knowledge or skills mastery, because emotion is their tool. The group is easier to herd, ladies and gentlemen. My friend Linda made a comment about the California grant to get the kids to teach their parents how wonderful Obamacare is. That these liberals don't seem to care about liberty, and she's quite right, they don't. They don't want liberty. Liberty is dangerous. Liberty implies individuals taking responsibility for their own actions. And individuals won't stay in their nice little comfortable blanket-lined box and wait for the hand to reach in and feed them. Individuals claw their way out of the box and they go hunt something to eat that isn't government pap. And therefore, they are incredibly dangerous animals that must be caught, confined, retrained, or put down, because they are a threat to the integrity of the group. Everybody else is comfortable in their box. And we can't have anyone uncomfortable. Just seeing somebody claw their way out of the box is upsetting to everybody else. It might make them think that there was something more interesting outside the box. And no, we cannot go outside the box, because if we go outside the box, then we can take care of ourselves and we won't need the box keepers to bring us our food and our water and our feel-good pill. Our children, ladies and gentlemen, are being taught to love their box. They are being convinced that inside the box is the most comfortable place to be, because your food and your water arrive just on time, and they taste good, and after you eat it, you just want to curl up and go to sleep because you know that you don't have to worry about it. Tomorrow you'll have some more, and you'll be able to curl up and go to sleep again. And that anybody who tries to tell you that there's something better outside the box is really wicked and evil and awful. And they're just trying to make you feel bad about yourself or put you in a box that's not as nice as everybody else's box or give you a little less food and water because they want yours. So they don't want you. They want you to stay in your box because once they get out of the box, then they can start taking your food away from you or they can ambush the food on the way in and they'll get it all and you won't have any. So we cannot have anybody telling our children that outside the box is better. We can't even have anybody telling our children to think while they're in there. Because if they did that, they might start wondering if there was maybe something different to eat outside the box or maybe something other than water to drink outside the box or maybe there was a softer blanket or maybe there were different smells or different people who did things in different ways. We can't have that. Because that's what our expectations, ladies and gentlemen, for our schools and for our kids are leading to. Because there are too many people out there who expect schools, who expect education, to be a feel-good, happy land where everybody gets an A, the teachers love all their students, the students love one another, no one ever has an argument, no one ever disagrees, no one ever has an idea that might upset someone, no one ever says anything or does anything that could be offensive to someone else, that we're all brothers and sisters together, happily learning from our watered-down textbooks, comfortable that our teacher loves us, and so we will get an A. And that, ladies and gentlemen, that expectation is way more common than most people realize. And it's being promoted through agencies like the Federal Department of Education, grant money like that going to California to have the Hitler Youth promoting the Nazi healthcare plan. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, it's exactly the same thing. If they had done something like that and broadcast it 50 years ago when I was in school, oh my God, everybody in the state legislature would have been probably run out of town on a rail, tarred and feathered. The idea of using children to sell a government program to their parents, my parents would have been horrified, as would the parents of every one of my classmates. And yet they are proud of this. It is the progressive education model, ladies and gentlemen. Look back to the early 1900s, when the public schools were the ones that were supposed to indoctrinate the children into good health care habits and sanitation and cleanliness and politeness and so on and so forth, so they'd go home and teach it to their parents. And, of course, everybody looks at that and says, oh, isn't that wonderful? You know, all these poor kids were, at least they had one place where they knew what it was like to be clean. Yes, but where do you stop? When you give over to public agencies the rights to manipulate and use your children to induce you to accept their dictates, you might as well just turn back the clock to 1935 in Berlin. Because that's where we are heading. That is where we are going, ladies and gentlemen. And we have got to wake each other up. You've got to talk to people. You've got to talk with your neighbors, your friends, your family members, and get them to understand that people who are libertarians or conservatives or Tea Party members or whatever the radical right is called, although I never thought I'd ever be called a radical anything, but apparently I am. My friend Linda says she does every day, and I know she does, bless her heart. I do it every week on this show, and I do it at school, and I do it more a little subtly because I'm dealing with kids. I can be a little more of a role model because, fortunately, my classroom is supposed to be not a very comfortable place. So everybody expects to be a little uncomfortable while they're in there. And the funny part is the vast majority of them, from what I understand in my evaluation, wish they could spend more time in my classroom. That was another thing that came up in my evaluation yesterday. My principal thanked me for taking over the Spanish 1 class when we lost the Spanish teacher until he could find a permanent replacement. And that one of the students on whom I was hardest apparently told him that, you know, we really miss Mrs. Rowland. She was strict and she didn't let us get by with anything, but we really learned a lot with her. And I was surprised, pleasantly surprised, because that particular student I would not have expected it from at all. So I guess that's one of the reasons I keep doing what I do, ladies and gentlemen. Because I get those little surprises every now and again. But that's what I do. I try in my job and on this show to tell the truth. To tell what I see and where I see it leading. I don't have an axe to grind. I have no interest in public office. I have no expectations of ever becoming wealthy. And to be quite honest, I don't think I'd want to, because I'd probably be as crazy as Howard Hughes. I'm too much of a recluse to enjoy the stage that wealth puts you on. My stage is considerably smaller, and I'm comfortable with that. But my expectations, ladies and gentlemen, of myself and of you are high. I expect that those of you listening out there and my friends in the chat room care about this country and about its future and about its values and its culture. And I expect that each and every one of them will do whatever they can to try to promote those values and this nation and what it stands for. Because we are unique, ladies and gentlemen, and we are exceptional. And that American exceptionalism is not arrogance or colonialism or power hunger. That American exceptionalism is high expectations. Americans have always had high expectations. We've never been good at the, oh, well, gee, I know I can't do that, so I don't think I'm even going to try thinking pattern. Never, not once in our history. And our high expectations and our desire to see what's over the next hill and turn it to our use have led us to making a lot of mistakes, for which we have paid, and probably will pay as long as we exist as a nation. But we've always done everything we can to meet those expectations And then if they, in the process, created damage, to try to repair it. Unfortunately, because we have high expectations, we have a tendency to bend over backwards to repair something to the point where we break it even worse than it was originally. Affirmative action is an example of that. And the entitlement mentality. And the subliminal message to Black Americans that we know you can't succeed without an extra help and a crutch, so we'll give it to you. Our expectations, ladies and gentlemen, as a nation and as individuals, should be high. They should be realistic, if possible. But they should go out on the high end of realism, not the low one. We've never sat back and said, oh, well, human beings are all just monsters and totally incapable of doing anything, so we're just not going to even bother to try to make society a place where people can actually live long enough to succeed. No, we've had higher expectations than that. Our founding fathers had extraordinarily high expectations, but they were based in an understanding of reality. They knew they were embarking on an experiment that had never been tried before. The closest was ancient Greece and the democracy of Athens. And they learned from that, that kind of democracy basically descended into a popularity contest and mob rule. So they created for us a republic based on the idea that governments derived their power from the consent of the governed, and that the people were the nation, not the government. And that if the will of the people were followed, and the God-given rights of the people were protected, the nation would prosper. And they were right. The civil rights movement never ends, ladies and gentlemen. Every single thing that we have done as a nation could be called a part of it. From rebelling against Great Britain, through the Spanish-American War, World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, Iraq, Iran, wherever we have been, it's always been about civil rights, ours or somebody else's. Our expectations, ladies and gentlemen, for ourselves and for the world have always been high, in the sense that we have expected ourselves to be the bearers of that same torch the lady in New York Harbor has held up so magnificently for so long. We have expected ourselves as Americans to deal with the world from a standpoint of liberty and personal responsibility. The freedom to become all that you can become, and the opportunity to try. That is the dearest held civil right of any human being, the opportunity to try. That is an expectation that everyone should and does have. All the way back to the sandbox and playing with a toy truck. Everybody gets a chance to try to move the toy truck over the sand hills. And some people are better with the toy truck than others, but everybody gets a chance to try. And if they aren't really good with the toy truck, they've got a chance to try the swings, or jumping rope, or playing hopscotch, or climbing on the monkey bars, which they won't let you do anymore because you might fall and hurt yourself, or go down the slide, which they probably won't let you do anymore unless you wear a helmet and padding. Or ride the merry-go-round, which they probably won't let you do anymore unless you are buckled in like you're in a race car and wearing a flame-retardant suit just in case it catches fire. The opportunity to try, ladies and gentlemen. That should be the expectation for our schools, as well as our citizens in their material, professional, and religious lives. The freedom to try and the freedom to fail and the freedom to start over in another direction. Not guaranteed equal comfort in your own little box with your own little blanket and your own little food and water bowls, but the opportunity to live outside of a box. To choose where you want to put a blanket and whether or not you want crunchies or sloppy food in your bowl. My cats like both. And believe me, they have the opportunity to try because I try them out on new things practically every week. If I give my cats that kind of opportunity, ladies and gentlemen, they are not indoor cats, by the way, or, well, not solely indoor. They have their own ingress and egress through a cat flap because, oh, they also have their own claws because they go outside. And I refuse to deprive them of their protection and their ability to escape if they're attacked. I'm kinder to my cats than progressive Democrats are to me because they don't want me to have any claws. And they don't want me to have an opportunity to try and go someplace that might be different, that I might get hurt in, or do something that might not meet the approval of somebody else, or live somewhere that means that I am not sitting in my neighbor's lap and we're not both together holding up the telephone wire so that we can really understand the integrity of the group. Progressives don't want our kids to have those kind of expectations. What they want is for our children to expect to be taken care of their entire lives. They want our children to remain children, a little taller, a little heavier, a little more coordinated, capable of reproduction. But children, nonetheless, who look to mommy, daddy, government to provide for them because they deserve it. Well, our children deserve to be provided for, ladies and gentlemen. They are immature beings. They cannot, because they are not yet equipped, to live without our protection and our care. But sooner or later, every one of them is going to become a chronological adult. And when they become a chronological adult, what are their expectations of themselves? To find another nice mommy daddy? To make sure their food bowl is full and they have a nice, warm, cuddly place to sleep and a teddy bear to hold on to and that nobody makes loud noises around them and nobody disturbs them when they're asleep and nobody expects anything of them other than what they enjoy doing. Because that's what our public schools are teaching them to expect, ladies and gentlemen, and parents are going right along with it. Because they're stepping in between their children and the consequence of their children's lack of work ethic or disruptive behaviors or inability to understand that to learn requires an effort. They're stepping between their children and the consciousness that you can fail. And if you do, you pick yourself up and you go back and you do a better job next time. They are protecting them into servitude, ladies and gentlemen, by expecting them to remain children, to never grow up, to not even have the daring and adventure of Peter Pan and the Lost Boys. If you've ever read the novel, Peter Pan, it isn't a nice, sweet, lovable Disney version. J.M. Barrie created Peter Pan as the embodiment of the god Pan, the god who promoted and stood for the self-indulgence of the wild, the eternal childhood of the woodland creature, who never had to face the problems of thinking and reasoning and being responsible for its actions. But our kids are not going to have that kind of Peter Pan. Our kids are going to have the kind of Peter Pan in the Disney movie, where everybody flies around and the fairies save you at the last minute and all the good things happen because Peter Pan is there, a.k.a. government, and nobody will let Captain Cook do anything bad to you. Because we're so special. We're so important because we exist. We're so incredibly important because we exist. Our educational expectations, ladies and gentlemen, need to have a good, strong dose of reality. We need to stop expecting perfection and deal with the fact that we can't have it. We need to stop expecting a risk-free life and deal with the fact that we can't have that either. And we certainly need to stop expecting the government to raise our children for us. That we could have, but believe me, what we would get back would be unrecognizable, and we certainly would not want it. I know everybody listening and everybody in the chat room out there cares about this nation. Otherwise, you wouldn't be listening to this show. I have a caller on the line. Hang on, folks. Hello there.
Hi, it's me from California.
I figured it was my bird of paradise. I'm doing great, honey.
Oh my
gosh. How about you?
Oh, hanging in there. You know, when you were talking about the progressives and the little boxes, and, you know, they don't like independent thought. You know, no statist does.
Of course not.
No oppressive government does.
And in their premises, darling, independent thought is illogical because independent thought means you're not part of the group and the group integrity isn't your most important goal. And their policies and their methods of selling them won't work on people who are actually independent thinkers.
Yeah, and then when I actually went, you know, that L.A., I think it was L.A. USD.
L.A.
Yeah.
USD, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I went to their website, and they had a place where you could contact them. Oh, did I contact them? I said, if this ACA healthcare law is so incredibly great, why do you have to keep selling it? And then I said, most of the people, the majority of the people in the United States don't want it, but it was shoved down our throats anyway.
Uh-huh.
And then I said, oh, how dare you use the children like Hitler's youth. And then at the end of my piece, I said, Sieg Heil, and I sent it. I don't care.
Uh-huh.
You know what? We're at the 11th hour. I'm sure Big Sis has me on her list anyway. So
probably.
I don't care.
We're probably both there, dear. I don't give a rat's behind anyhow.
A rat's behind.
So.
Exactly.
And, I really
you know,
don't.
This is, it's crazy what's going on. I mean, When you deal with the progressives and the what was it that they were talking about? Oh, when you talked about the Common Core stuff, well, and you said the parents are going along with it, because they have already been pre-indoctrinated for this.
They don't know
that what their kids are getting taught is horrible. They're not appalled like we are, because they've never read anything. They have never been exposed to the truth of real
history. No, they haven't.
And, I mean,
and you know,
my mom, they used to do that to her. My mother's 90 years old. She says, and I said, they purposefully did that to you, mother, so you wouldn't go out and learn history. They wanted you to hate it. They wanted you to think it was boring and dry and miserable, so that you'd never pick up another book in your life. That's
exactly
why they did it to you.
I was so lucky to escape that, because to me, history's always been about people. I never, you know, the dates and the names and so on and so forth, I didn't have any problem with, because I have a very good memory. So that was just, you know, natural. I wouldn't speak three languages if I didn't have a good memory. But it fascinated me to imagine, okay, what was the life of somebody who lived in that time? What was their day like? What did they do?
Right.
What did they see when they woke up in the morning? History to me was always people. Always people.
Well, you know, your motivation is, you know, is personal, because I remember listening to Frank Winkle, and his motivation for reading it was because he's a guy and he wanted to read about the fighting and the battles, and he wanted to get history from a war perspective or a battles or whatever, which, I mean, that's always been there. So, you know, but it's amazing.
And why they do things fascinates me. It always has.
Exactly. When I started getting, you know, like when about 4 or 5 years, 5, 6 years ago, and Beck was touting, got to read this history, you guys. You got to read history. And so Frank used to say on his shows, he says, thank God for Glenn Beck. He made reading history sexy again. I mean,
yeah.
You know, what he would do. And so, but it was the truth, because everybody got on board. And then once I got into it, I wanted to learn not only the what, but the why and the how. And with certain authors, whether it was the Bolshevik Revolution or Hitler's regimes, I got all that from the books that I've chosen. I did finish reading Bonhoeffer, which was an incredible book.
Well, that's one of the reasons why the Common Core standards for English are so god-awful, Linda, because what they want now, supposedly something like 49.5% or 50% of the material that the kids are going to be tested on for reading is supposed to be, quote, informational or nonfiction, unquote.
Oh, God.
In other words, don't read the classics. Don't think about what you're reading. Don't make. Don't go into why the character acts that way. Just read a nice little sermon on climate change and how we all should hate coal, and then answer correctly according to the way it's what it says.
I know, and we'll get to that part in a second. But you know, basically, what was I going to say? I was talking about the history of Germany, et cetera, and then. And Glenn always talks about Dietrich waited too long, because it was 1934 when he actually figured it out and didn't want, you know, he wanted to go after him right away. But some of the people in the pulpit said no, and anyway, it's the long and the short. But now what Glenn's trying to do with the civil rights movement, and I know you touched on it, and I'm just hoping that September isn't too late. I'm looking at what's going on today, and I'm going, Glenn, do you think you want to wait till September?
Yeah. Well, there's logistics involved here.
Oh, I know. I know. Mm-hmm. I absolutely get it. Oh, I know what he's doing. He's doing it very wisely. And the other day, that schmuck, the one-in-chief, he comes out and he starts doing his speech at Georgetown or something on the climate change, and he talks about
us as
flat earthers. Oh,
yeah.
Well, that's when I wanted to take a baseball bat to that Mussolini chin of his. Oh, Lord.
Oh, my God, yes.
I thought, you, miserable. And then I went into the Wiki, you know, the Google, and I Googled up, and I wanted to get quotes from Hitler in his Mein Kampf. So I pulled up about 4 or 5 of them, and it talks about how Hitler viewed telling people lies and making them believe it. I got a bunch of them. So I'm going to be using those a lot, believe me. Oh,
I'll bet you are.
Because of these people, I went to that sandbag meeting. I was horrified, absolutely horrified. It was a Delphi meeting. They had their facilitators, and they had their special interest groups and their stakeholders. And, of course, I mean, I was bombarded with socialists. I was just, it was like a tsunami in my face. And then once they started touting their carbon this and socialist that, equity, I lost it. And I said, no, I had to call them out on it. And I said, no, I don't believe you. This is what I know. You know, and I went through everything ABC, and I told them this one person said, because this guy was asking, the facilitator was asking about you know, because he kind of figured out that I wasn't too happy with government being involved in this stuff. And he says, well, what level, what, you know, how much government should be involved in these processes? And I said, as far as I'm concerned, the government should be out of about 90% of what it's in right now in my whole life. And he looked at me like he was in shock, and this lady across the table looks at me and she says, because I said I believed in individual personal responsibility and maximum individual freedom. And she says, you think individuals would build the roads? And I said, absolutely, if they had free market and real capitalism, which we haven't had since 1850. She looked at me I was from Mars. But you know what? I got her to start thinking, because she had that look on her face like, wow. She didn't have a comeback. She didn't know her history, you know. So, I'm just learning.
If we really had a free market in education, we wouldn't have the dumbest population among developed countries we've ever had.
Exactly.
I mean, it's
pathetic. You're right.
Doc,
you know,
said in the chat room a few minutes ago that he read an interview. He heard an interview with an author whose books were being read by high school students, and the author said that he was very grateful that they were enjoying them, but they had been written for fifth graders, and that's not at all surprising. Honey, believe me, the eighth graders that I have, they cannot get through a Sherlock Holmes story.
Oh, my gosh. That's
they
so
simply
sad.
Can't. And you might as well forget Poe. I mean, they had to watch the movie, The Pit and the Pendulum.
Good God.
And a cartoon
on the right?
Oh, my God. No. We watch movies. You know, we watch movies. We don't actually read the plays, God forbid. And, of course, once I got introduced to Shakespeare, I went out and bought a complete works and went through it in about a week, I think. But
good for you. Being of the theater and my dad being in the theater, we would naturally want to actually do the soliloquies and pretend to be on stage, ourselves. And he did. And this is how I enjoyed the plays, not only reading them, but putting on the costume and speaking
in front of people. My sisters hated Shakespeare when they were in high school, and I dragged both of them with me to the Shakespeare Festival at William & Mary one year. And I believe, I forget what the play was that time, but anyway, both of them had such a good time that they dragged me back for five more years.
Awesome. One of my favorite comedies was Much Ado About Nothing, and I mean, that was I loved it. Absolutely loved that one.
My dad used to recite Hamlet's soliloquy for us a lot, but of course he was an amateur thespian himself. And I think had we remained in the place where he was actually a part of a little theater group, I probably would have wound up doing the same thing. But then again, what I do for a living is I'm on stage anyway when I teach.
You betcha. You bet you are.
You have to be a little bit of a thespian to do that job.
Sure.
If you weren't, you would not be able to catch the attention of the current middle school student. They're always difficult to catch because that age group they're thinking below the waist 90% of the time anyway.
Constantly.
So you really,
have
to be extravagant.
You have to be like Merlin to get their attention, absolutely.
Very much so, yes. And believe me, I polish up my wand every day before I go off to Hogwarts. I promise you I do.
But the kids that
I see, even the bright ones, are not being stretched. There's not any. When we were kids, we were stretched. We were given things that were hard because they were hard. Because conquering them, getting to the point where we understood them, was terrific for our self-esteem because it was based on real achievement. Not a pat on the head and a cookie, it said, and everybody gets a trophy, but real accomplishment.
I know.
We met our own expectations, and we were helped to set our expectations high. Expectations are being lowered across the board, which is why I chose that topic tonight, Linda.
Yes.
Because our expectations of our quote-unquote leaders are abysmal. We expect them to be dishonest, self-serving, lacking in morals, without ethics.
I think what's happening with when you look at the expectations of the leaders, it's not so much that you and I or the people in the Patriots movement don't expect good things from them. It's that we are seeing the truth as to what they actually are, and we're going, oh, my gosh, I mean, why have they lowered their own bar? This is what I'm saying. They're slithering around D.C. like little serpents. You know, that's where that bar is.
because the people who keep electing them think that gaming the system and getting your own out of somebody else is a mark of success.
Yes, I know. Well, because they figured out that they can vote themselves the coffers. You know, they can vote people who will steal from the others who they produce, you know, to the ones who are going to be standing in line for the Obama phones. So, I mean, this is, the founders knew this stuff. They warned against everything that we're going through right now. But did we listen? No, we're listening now. And all we can do is fight. And that's what I do. I don't care. I was talking to my neighbor. I told her that I didn't like what was going on. I said, things are getting kind of hairy. She didn't know what I was talking about. They don't listen to the news because they don't want to know, because they're afraid of it. And so I thought, okay, well, you know, when it's going to be a lot more frightening when the brick wall hits you, you know, and flattens you like the steamroller of the statism, and that's coming. So I don't know. If that's, I'll just let it go. If you don't want to learn, fine, I can't. I'm not going to force them. I love that one with a horse and you can't make them think. I love that. That was perfect.
And believe me, that was great. That one struck me, too. The reason I reposted it, the reason I shared it is because, doggone it, that's what every teacher out there who is a teacher, not just somebody looking for tenure, but a real teacher, every single one of us understands that. That is our day, every single school day, because there we are trying to give these kids the education that we got and that we worked hard for. That's what we
I know. And you know that the sad news is that I don't think these children, they have any concept, because it is given to them. They don't even have to pay for any of their books. They don't have to worry about, you know what I'm saying? It's not like like when I was growing up, we did get free everything in that sense, except our parents paid for it through the taxation of their property taxes.
Right.
But you know, we did want to learn and things like that.
Yep.
And when I got out of high school, the thing that was most important to us was to struggle to get a job and to make sure that you could take care of yourself. Those things, that was, and then you knew you had to pay for your own way. You had to make sure you had gas in your car, and you had to have a car, and you had to have nice clothes so you could go to an interview, and that sort of thing. And those, you know, you appreciate everything that you earn, and they don't appreciate it on any level, whether it's learning how to read or doing a play or anything. It's very sad.
Their expectations are that they will remain children their entire lives. We are, as a nation, we are telling them that all they have to do is show up and everything will be handed to them.
It's Plato's cave in the Republic.
It is.
That's what they're creating.
Yep.
And I'm going to let you wrap it up. You got about 5 minutes. Thank you so much. That was fun.
Thank you, Dawn. I'm so glad you made it tonight, and I'm looking forward to Delaney.
Okay, me too. Oh, yes. I'm counting the days. 14 days.
Yes, ma'am.
God bless.
Take care, honey. Thank you so much, folks. That was my friend Linda, that beautiful bird of paradise from California. That's one of my heroes, ladies and gentlemen, because her expectations are always high of herself and others. And that's why we honor her, because she doesn't just say it. She goes out and puts her money where her mouth is. And because she is the nation, as we all are, she is going to make a difference. She makes a difference every day, because like any teacher, and she is a teacher, you cannot always have the seeds fall on fertile ground. Like in the parable, sometimes the seeds fall on stony ground and cannot take root. But that doesn't mean that you should stop trying to sow them. It's why I go back to school every fall and get up every morning at 5:30 and drive to school and come home growling and spitting at my cats every evening. I keep doing it because I know that among the stony ground, there's lots of fertile ground. There's more fertile ground out there, ladies and gentlemen, than we realize, because we have lowered our own expectations to match those of the idiots who get keep getting reelected to Congress, and the incredible piece of bucolic byproduct dwelling in our house in Washington. Keep your expectations high, ladies and gentlemen, for yourselves, your children, and our public education system. Because Americans are exceptional because of their high expectations. Not because we always fulfill them, but because we have them. Because we believe that every single living human being has a right to try. And every single living human being has a chance to be better tomorrow than they were yesterday. And that every single living human being has the right to grow up into an independent, thinking adult. Those are the expectations we need to have of our schools, ladies and gentlemen, public and private. Those are the expectations we should have for our children. Those are the expectations we should have for our schools, our government, our elected officials, our friends, our neighbors, and our families. That everyone deserves a chance to try, that everyone deserves a chance to grow up, and that everyone has the right to make his or her own choices and deal with the consequences thereof in liberty. And that everybody, everybody, has the chance to get out of the box. Thank you, everyone, for joining me tonight for Patriot Education. I will be back again next Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And I urge you between now and then to listen in to the rest of our Blog Talk Radio shows. Also, visit us at our website, www.patriotfamilies.com, where you can express your views, make your suggestions, and help us raise all of our expectations by telling us what yours are. Remember that you are the nation, ladies and gentlemen, and you do make a difference. All it takes is one pebble to start an avalanche. You can be that pebble in the avalanche of freedom in your town, in your state, and in your nation. All it takes is high expectations and the willingness to take advantage of the opportunity to try. I also would like to give all my love, as always, to my biggest fan, and to remind everybody listening that the thing that keeps most of us going is love. Love of family, love of country, love of God. Those things will keep us going and help us mend the rips and tears our nation is suffering. God bless everyone. Have a great evening. And hopefully I'll see you here next Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on Blog Talk Radio. Good night, everyone.
Blog Talk Radio and Patriot Family is where you need to be if you want to be informed and inspired 5 days a week. On Monday at 7:30 p.m., you can listen to the Constitution Hour. On Tuesday at 7 p.m., you can listen to Patriot Family Chat. On Wednesday at 7 p.m., you can listen to Right from the Left Coast. On Thursday at 6 p.m., you can listen to Patriot Education. And on Friday at 7 p.m., you can listen to Exposed but Never Forgotten. All times are Eastern Standard Time. Hope to see you there.